A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Cordura and YKK. Daniel wants to move past the broad strokes and get into what those two names actually mean at the specification level, what we're buying when we buy them, and what else belongs in the same sentence.
The thing I love about this prompt is that it's not asking whether these are good brands. Daniel's already past that. He wants to know what the numbers mean. 500D versus 1000D. A number 8 zipper versus a number 10. And then, what's the rest of the ecosystem? What are the other components where there's a similarly specific right answer?
And he's right that those two names dominate the conversation, almost to the exclusion of everything else. You see a bag listed online, and the seller leads with genuine Cordura and YKK zippers, like that's the whole story.
Which it isn't. It's a good start. But it's a start. Let me begin with Cordura, because the denier numbers are the thing people see most often and understand least.
500D, 1000D. It sounds like a strength rating.
It's not. Denier is a yarn weight measurement. It tells you how many grams 9,000 meters of a single filament weighs. So 1000D yarn weighs 1,000 grams per 9,000 meters. 500D weighs 500 grams. It's a measure of mass per unit length. Not tensile strength, not abrasion resistance, not tear strength. Just how heavy the thread is.
So when someone says this bag is 1000D Cordura, they're telling you the yarn weight, not how tough it is.
They're telling you one input to toughness. Heavier yarns do tend to be tougher, but only if everything else is equal, and it almost never is. The weave density matters. The thread used to stitch it matters. The needle size that punched the holes matters. The stitch count per inch matters. A properly built 500D bag will outlast a sloppily built 1000D bag every time.
But within Cordura specifically, same brand, same weave standards, what's the actual difference between 500 and 1000?
Abrasion resistance is the main one, and this gets to what actually makes Cordura different from generic nylon in the first place. The key is air texturing. After the nylon is spun, Cordura blasts it with high-pressure air jets. That bulks up the yarn, makes it fuzzy under a microscope, way more surface area than a smooth nylon filament. When something rubs against it, the friction distributes across all that extra surface.
So it's not that the nylon itself is a different polymer. It's the geometry of the yarn.
The geometry. A standard nylon at the same denier might fail at 8 to 15,000 double rubs on a Weisenbead test. 500D Cordura typically goes 50 to 60,000. 1000D Cordura goes 100 to 120,000 plus. You're getting 2 to 3 times the abrasion cycles just from the air texturing before you even change the denier.
50,000 rubs versus 15,000. That's not incremental.
It's a different product category. And then there's the scuff visibility thing. Because the surface is textured, light diffuses across it. A scuff blends in. On smooth nylon, a scuff shows up as a shiny light mark. Your bag looks beat up faster even if the fabric is structurally fine.
Which matters for EDC because you're not just worried about the bag failing. You're carrying it every day and you don't want it to look like it's been through war after 6 months.
Right? Now, the weight penalty. 500D Cordura runs about 7.2 ounces per square yard. 1000D runs about 12.5. That's a 73% jump. On a 30-liter pack, switching the whole shell from 500 to 1,000 adds roughly 380 to 450 grams, nearly a pound.
And for most people carrying a bag to an office or a coffee shop, that pound is dead weight. They're never going to abrade through 500D Cordura in their lifetime.
That's the 1,000D default trap. A lot of buyers and even product designers just default to 1,000D because heavier sounds tougher. There's a great piece on the Cordura blog. A fabric procurement manager wrote about switching a client from 1000D to 500D for the body panels. Saved about $2.10 per yard. On 8,000 yards, that's $16,800, nearly 9% of their annual fabric spend. And the bags performed identically for the actual use case.
So when should someone actually pay for 1000D?
High abrasion contact zones. The bottom panel that drags across concrete. Lower corners. Drag handles. Dump pouches. Ruck floors. Places where the bag is literally scraping against abrasive surfaces regularly. The smart construction, and this is what the good bag makers do, is hybrid. 1000D on the bottom and wear points, 500D on the body, lid, and pockets. You get about 80% of the abrasion protection at about 65% of the weight penalty.
That's the spec to look for then. Not 1000D Cordura everywhere, but hybrid construction with 1000D in the wear zones.
And most brands won't advertise it that way because 1000D Cordura is the marketing line. You have to look at the actual product specs or ask. Now let me move to zippers, because this is where the conversation gets interesting.
AKK. The other name everyone knows to look for.
And for good reason. But there's a hierarchy inside YKK that most people don't know exists. The gauge number 5, 8, 10, that's the width of the close chain in millimeters. A number 5 zipper is about 5 millimeters across the teeth. Number 8 is 8. Number 10 is 10.
So bigger number, wider chain, stronger zipper.
Roughly 30% more operating force before distorting or separating, going from a 5 to an 8 or 10. But the gauge isn't just about strength in the abstract, it's about matching the zipper to the load. A number 5 is correct for external pockets and laptop sleeves. Main openings on day packs deserve an 8. Travel pack clamshells and luggage need a 10.
And a bag where every zipper is the same size is a bag where nobody thought about where the strain actually lives.
A maker that puts a 10 where the opening gets yanked and a 5 where it doesn't has thought about the bag's life. A maker that puts the same small zip everywhere has thought about the invoice. And the zipper is one of the cheapest parts of the bill of materials. We're talking 60 to 80 cents a yard for a YKK versus 25 to 35 cents for a generic equivalent. The upgrade costs pennies, and it's the single most likely reason the whole product ends up in landfill.
What actually fails on a zipper? Is it the teeth?
The slider. About 80% of luggage zipper failures are the slider, not broken teeth or torn tape. The slider is a small cast metal carriage with an internal channel that forces the two halves of the chain to mesh. Every cycle wears that channel a little wider. Once the gap grows by a fraction of a millimeter, the slider glides right over the teeth without closing them. The zipper looks fine, the teeth are all there, but it won't stay shut.
So, the metallurgy of a tiny cast part is what determines whether your bag's main compartment stays closed after 3 years.
And YKK smelts its own brass, formulates its own plastics, weaves its own tape, builds its own zipper-making machines in-house, and sells them to no one. That vertical integration means a number 10 coil from their Georgia plant behaves identically to one from Japan. When a bag maker specs a YKK zipper, they know exactly what they're getting.
Which also means counterfeits are worth making.
They exist. YKK runs an anti-counterfeiting program. A known gray market trick is a genuine YKK slider threaded onto generic chain. The pull tab says YKK, but the chain is whatever was cheapest. You'd never know without examining the tape.
So YKK zippers on a product page might mean genuine sliders on junk chain.
It might. The reputable brands aren't doing this, but at the lower end of the market, it's a real thing. Now, beyond gauge, there are zipper subtypes that matter for EDC. The big one is YKK's racket coil. They call it RC. It reshapes the spiral into a flattened oval with a groove along the top. The stitching sits down in that groove, out of harm's way.
So when the zipper rubs against something, the thread isn't the first thing that makes contact.
YKK did abrasion testing with 400 grit sandpaper. Conventional coil had its holding thread badly damaged after 60 rubs. The RC withstood 100 or more. If you're buying a bag where the main zipper is going to drag across tables, floors, car trunks, RC is the upgrade that matters.
And is that something you can spot on a product listing?
Rarely. Most brands just say YKK zippers and leave it at that. You often have to dig into detailed spec sheets or reviews. But it's worth knowing the name so you can ask. The other subtype people encounter is AquaGuard, the PU-coated coil that looks shiny and waterproof. Important caveat, it's water-repellent, not waterproof. And the coating is a consumable. Owners report the PU film going sticky and peeling after a few years of daily carry.
So the shiny waterproof-looking zipper is the one that degrades fastest.
A plain reverse coil zip under a fabric storm flap will outlast the coating. The Aqua Guard looks great in product photos. It's a marketing choice, not a durability choice.
All right. So we've got Cordura Denier, hybrid construction, YKK gauge, and RC versus standard coil. What else belongs in this spec sheet Daniel's trying to assemble?
Three things: hardware, thread, and webbing. And I want to start with thread because it's the thing nobody sees and it's where most bags actually fail.
Not the fabric.
There's a breakdown from a bag maker who inspected 47 failed bags over 18 months. The failure breakdown, bar tack and seam failure, was about 58%. Thread cut through fabric at attachment points. Zipper tape tear or coil separation was about 21%. PU coating breakdown was about 13%. Actual fabric abrasion through was 8%.
8%! So, 92% of failures were everything except the fabric wearing through.
The fabric is almost never the bottleneck. The stitching is. And thread has its own specification system, the TEX system. TEX is grams per 1,000 meters. For EDC gear, you want TEX 70, also called V92, for body seams. TEX 90, V138 for load-bearing webbing attachment points. And the material should be bonded nylon 6/6. The bonding is a resin coating that protects the fibers, reduces friction during sewing, and resists abrasion.
Bonded nylon 6/6. That's the spec to look for.
And stitch density. The tactical standard is 7 to 8 stitches per inch. Drop to 5 stitches per inch on a 1000D panel and the seam tears at about 60% of its rated load. The needle size has to match too. 500D runs a size 14 or 16 needle, 1000. D needs 18 or 20. Use a 14 on 1000D and you get skip stitches and seams that pull apart under 40 pounds instead of the 90 plus a properly built seam should hold.
So the spec cascade is the right denier, Cordura, cut with the right needle, stitched with the right tex-bonded nylon, at the right stitches per inch. Miss any one of those, and the bag fails early, regardless of what the fabric label says.
And none of this is on the product page. You have to either trust the brand or learn to inspect the seams yourself. Now, hardware. Buckles, adjusters, triglides. The material spec here's acetol, POM resin. It's a crystalline thermoplastic with a service temperature range from minus 40 to plus 270 degrees Fahrenheit. Excellent flexural memory. Doesn't get brittle and cold or soft in heat the way nylon or polypropylene buckles do.
And the brands to know.
ITW Nexus is the military standard. They also make a line called Gilitex for infrared signature reduction, which matters if you're actually operating under night vision, but for civilian EDC, it's overkill. Duraflex is National Molding's berry-compliant line used by Gorik Air Tortuga. Wujin is the Korean option, smoother edges, quieter operation used by Alpaca Belroy Able Carry. And then there's Austrialpen Cobra for load-bearing, CNC machined aluminum buckles, completely different category.
What's the tell that a buckle is unbranded junk?
If it's not marked with a manufacturer name and it feels light, it's probably nylon or polypropylene instead of acetal. Those crack under UV exposure and cold. A broken buckle in the field costs more in trust than in money. And buckles aren't expensive. We're talking maybe 50 cents to a dollar per unit for genuine Duraflex versus 15 to 25 cents for unbranded. The savings are trivial and the failure is catastrophic.
And webbing.
Military spec, mile, well, 43668, type 3, now superseded by AA55301. It's 1-inch wide textured or multifilament nylon webbing with a minimum breaking strength of 1,000 pounds. This is the standard for pawls and mole webbing on tactical gear. If a bag lists mil-spec type 3 nylon webbing or mil-W43668 in the spec sheet, you know what you're getting. Generic webbing from unknown mills varies wildly in breaking strength and UV resistance.
So the full list Daniel's looking for, the concrete specifications beyond heavy-duty nylon with a strong zipper, is what?
Cordura fabric with the denier matched to the use case. 500D for body panels, 1000D for wear zones, hybrid construction preferred. YKK zippers, gauge matched to the opening, 8 or 10 for main compartments, RC subtype for abrasion-prone openings. Bonded nylon 6/6 thread, TEX 70 minimum for body seams, TEX 90 for load points, 7 to 8 stitches per inch. Acetal hardware from ITW Nexus, Duraflex, or Wujin. Mil-spec type 3 nylon webbing.
And then there are a couple of materials that sit alongside this ecosystem. Hypalon.
Hypalon is a synthetic rubber, TPU-coated nylon 6-6, typically a 210 denier base. It's the same material they use on Zodiac boats. In bags, it shows up at critical stress points, handle attachment zones, shoulder strap connections, drag handles, MOLLE attachment areas. It's a reinforcement layer, not a primary fabric. You see a patch of slightly shiny, rubbery material at a high-stress junction. That's Hypalon.
And the stitching pattern matters too. Bar tacks.
A bar tack is 28 to 42 stitches concentrated in a tiny area, a dense zigzag that withstands 100 to 180 kilograms of tensile force. Box X stitching is 2 to 3 times stronger than a simple box stitch and about 10 times stronger than single line stitching. You want bar tacks or box X at every strap root, webbing anchor, MOLLE attachment, and belt loop.
What about X-Bach? That's the other fabric name that comes up in premium bags.
X-Pack is a different animal entirely. It's a laminate from Dimension, Polyant, a face fabric, an X-shaped polyester grid for structure, a waterproof PET film, and a backing layer all bonded together. VX21, that's a 210D face, is the most common for packs. VX42, 420D face, is for high-stress areas. The tear strength on VX42 is about 238 newtons in the warp direction, 53 pounds.
When would you choose X-Pack over Cordura?
When waterproofness and low stretch are the priorities. X-Pack is fully waterproof because of that internal film layer. Cordura is only water-resistant via its PU coating. The trade-off is that X-Pack is stiffer and less abrasion-resistant than equivalent denier Cordura. Some premium bags now use both. X-Pack for the main body where waterproofing matters, Cordura for the bottom and where zones where abrasion resistance matters.
So it's not Cordura versus X-Pack as competitors. It's two different tools for two different jobs.
And the best bags use both. The spec sheet Daniel's building should include X-Pack as an option for the body if waterproofness matters, with the caveat that you're trading some abrasion resistance to get it.
One thing that strikes me about all of this, the thread, the needle size, the stitch density, the bar tacks, is that none of it's visible in a product photo. You can't see Tech 70 thread. You can't see whether the needle was the right size. You're buying on trust.
And that's why the brand matters more than any single spec. A bag maker who specs Cordura and YKK and Duraflex and bonded nylon thread and bar tacks at every stress point, that maker has made a series of decisions that cost more money at every step. They're not going to then cheap out on the invisible stuff because the invisible stuff is what they've been investing in the whole time.
The zipper tells you how the rest of the bag was built, down to the seams you'll never see.
That's the line. A maker that names its zipper, sizes it to the opening, and picks the coating for the climate rather than the photograph. That maker is telling you everything.
If Daniel's looking at a bag online and the listing says heavy-duty zipper without naming YKK or giving a gauge, that's not a missing detail. That's a signal.
It's a signal that the zipper is probably an SBS or a no-name coil and the maker doesn't want you to know. And if they skimp on the zipper, the cheapest part to upgrade and the most likely failure point, they skimped on everything else.
All right, let me try to put this all together into something Daniel can actually use when he's reading product pages. The concrete spec sheet.
Go for it.
Fabric, Cordura, with the denier specified. 500D is the smart default for urban EDC. 1000D only where abrasion is real. Bottom panels, drag handles. Hybrid construction is the gold standard. If the bag uses X-Pack, know that you're trading abrasion resistance for waterproofness.
If the listing just says nylon, without a denier or a brand, assume it's generic. It might be fine. It probably won't be.
Zippers, YKK, with the gauge specified. Number 8 or 10 on main openings, 5 on pockets. RC subtype is the meaningful upgrade. AquaGuard looks good in photos and degrades in years. A fabric storm flap over a standard zip outlasts a coated zip.
If the listing says YKK zippers without a gauge, ask. It might be a number 5 everywhere, which is wrong for a main compartment.
Thread, bonded nylon, 6-6, Tex 70 minimum for seams, Tex 90 for load points, 7 to 8 stitches per inch. You won't see this on a product page. You're judging the brand here.
Or inspecting the bag in person. You can count stitches per inch with your eye if you know what you're looking for.
Hot air, acetal buckles from ITW Nexus, Duraflex, or Wujin. If the buckle has no brand mark and feels light, walk away.
Mil-spec type 3, webbing for straps and mole, bar tacks or box, X-stitching at every attachment point, Hypalon or equivalent reinforcement at high-stress junctions.
That's 7 specs. Fabric, zipper gauge and type, thread, stitch density, hardware material, webbing, and reinforcement. None of them are expensive individually. All of them together separate a bag that lasts 5 years from one that lasts 20.
The thing I keep coming back to is that failure breakdown. 8% of bags fail because the fabric wore through. 92% fail because of seams, zippers, and coating. We spend all this time obsessing over denier, and the thing that actually kills the bag is the thread.
Which you can't see in the photo, and nobody puts on the spec sheet.
Which is why the brand is the real spec. A brand that staked its reputation on durability has made all these decisions already. You're not auditing their thread choice. You're trusting that a company who specs Duraflex buckles and YKK RC zippers also spec'd the right thread.
That's the answer to Daniel's question about what belongs alongside Cordura and YKK. It's not just more brand names. It's the invisible decisions that the visible brand names signal.
Brother LS2125.
I'm sorry?
1987. Still runs.
Hilbert, what are we talking about?
Sewing machine. Industrial straight stitch. Bought it from a man in Trenton who was closing his upholstery shop. $140. Had to rent a van.
You have an industrial sewing machine.
In the storage unit, next to the serger. The serger's a Juki, 1991. That one I got from a factory auction in Allentown. $42. Nobody bid. They were all there for the cutting tables.
You've been sewing bags?
Pouches. Tool rolls. A belt once. The belt was a mistake. Getting the stiffness right without a skiving machine is a whole thing. But pouches, those I can do.
What fabric?
500D Cordura. Bought a roll in 93. 50 yards, olive drab. Still have about 12 yards left. It was a closeout. The mill had overrun a government contract. Paid $1.80 a yard.
Of course, it was a government overrun.
The zippers are the problem. YKK number 8 coil, but I couldn't get the RC. Nobody was selling RC by the yard to civilians in the 90s. Had to use standard coil and just be careful with them.
And the thread?
Tech 70 bonded nylon. Gutermann, the German stuff. Spools last forever if you keep them out of the sun. The trick is tension. Too tight and the thread cuts the fabric. Too loose and the seam gaps. On 500D Cordura with a size 16 needle, the tension dial on the brother sits at about 3 1/4. Took me 11 years to figure that out.
11 years?
I'm not a fast learner.
Wait, you said the brother is a straight stitch machine. Bar tacks need zigzag.
That's what the Juki is for. I wheel the Juki out when I need bar tacks. The two machines sit on opposite sides of the storage unit. It's not efficient, but I know exactly where the tension dial needs to be on each one, and I'm not touching them.
You've been quietly making your own pouches to your own spec for 30 plus years.
They're not pretty. The stitching wanders sometimes. My eyes aren't what they were. But I've never had a seam fail. The one pouch I use for my socket set? That one's from 94. The Cordura's faded to almost gray. Zipper still closes.
Standard coil, not RC, and it's still closing after 32 years.
I'm careful with it. I don't yank. You treat a zipper like it's trying to help you, it lasts. You treat it like it owes you something, it doesn't.
That's actually the entire episode in one sentence.
The other thing is the webbing. I couldn't get mil-spec type 3 by the yard back then either, so I used seatbelt webbing from a junkyard. 1986 Volvo 240. Cut the belts out myself. That webbing is wider than spec, and it's not very compliant, but the braking strength on a Volvo seatbelt is considerable.
I don't even know what the spec on automotive seatbelt webbing is.
About 3,000 pounds. It's overbuilt for a pouch strap. But I had it.
Hilbert, do you still have the Volvo?
No. The Volvo's long gone. I kept the seatbelts. They're in a box with the rest of the webbing. The box is labeled. Everything's labeled.
Of course it is.
The point is, you don't need the exact spec every time. You need to know what the spec is trying to do. Abrasion resistance. Slider integrity. Seam strength. If you know what property you're maximizing, you can find your way there with whatever's available. The specs are a shortcut, not the only road.
That's the thing about the spec sheet Daniel's building. It's not a shopping list you have to match exactly. It's a description of what good looks like.
500D Cordura, YKK number 8, Tech 70 thread, acetal buckles. That's what good looks like. I've been making it in a storage unit since before most of these bag companies existed. They're catching up.
The misconception here, the thing most people get wrong, is that denier equals durability. Heavier fabric must mean a tougher bag. The bag fails at the seams, the zipper, and the buckles. The fabric is almost never what gives out.
8%. The fabric is 8% of failures. Shop the stitching, not the denier number.
Something I'm still thinking about. Hilbert's been running the same two machines for over 30 years, the Brother from 1987, the Juki from 91, and the thread tension that took 11 years to dial in. That's the thing about durable goods. The knowledge of how to make them lasts longer than the objects themselves.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping this show running, and apparently for maintaining an entire parallel manufacturing operation in a storage unit.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you want to send us your own questions or photos of 30-year-old homemade pouches, email us at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.